I am Joel McLeod.
And I'm Roland Tanner.
And welcome to the 905 Road. Milton is in a by-election. Former Minister of Red Tape Reduction, Parm Gill, resigned to run for the Federal Conservatives under Pierre Poilievre. This sudden move by Parm Gill left Doug Ford surprised and seemingly stumbling to find a replacement in Milton. This background has positioned what is normally a sleepy and boring affair into a matter of some urgency for politics in the 905 and Ontario at large. In a surprise announcement, former town councillor and mayoral candidate Zee Hamid said that he would run under the Ontario PC banner for the election. It was presumed that newly elected Ontario Liberal leader Bonnie Crombie would seek out a seat for the legislature in Milton, a riding that neighbored her old federal seat, and one that she would be very familiar with. A chance to showcase her bona fide to the electorate and earn a seat for the still-not-official party status Liberals in the legislature. Instead, the Ontario Liberals announced that they would run Galen Nadeau-Harris instead, son of Indira Nadeau-Harris, a former Liberal cabinet member. The stakes are high for both parties in this by-election. Doug Ford needs to keep this seat blue and send a message to his supporters and the electorate at large that the people are still on side with his policies and government despite numerous scandals and controversies. On the other hand, Bonnie Crombie needs a win here to prove she and the Ontario Liberal brand is still competitive in the 905 and to start crafting her narrative for the general election in a few years. As we've stated numerous times on this podcast, the 905 is where governments are made or broken in Ontario and Canada. This time seems to be no different. We are familiar with the candidates in question. We had Zee Hamid on before when he ran for mayor of Milton's last municipal election. We tried to bring him back this time. However, there was no response to our inquiries from his team. Galen Nadeau-Harris is no slouch either, and is familiar with the issues that matter most to Milton. So, with such high-caliber candidates running for the Ontario PCs and the Ontario Liberals, we wanted to wade through the hype and make sense of what's happening on the ground. To that end, we invited onto the podcast Sabrina Nanji to dive into what is going on in Milton. Sabrina is a journalist and founder of the Queen's Park Observer, the most read newsletter at the Ontario Legislature. She is an 8-year veteran of the QP Press Gallery. You can subscribe to her newsletter at qpobserver.ca, and a link will be included in our show notes. We highly recommend it to stay ahead of what's going on in the back rooms of Queen's Park, and we are very grateful for her taking the time to join us today. And as a friendly reminder that for our paid subscribers, you will find a link for the 905er Extra Minutes in your email for what Roland and I had to say after our chat with Sabrina concluded. You can get the link and the email in your inbox for only $5 a month. You can sign up by visiting 905er.ca and clicking on the supporter tab, or by clicking on the link in our show notes. Okay, well, thank you to Sabrina Nanji from the QP Observer. Thank you very much for taking the time from your very, very busy schedule to come on today at the last minute, because we have last minute information to add into this episode. So we're very excited to have you join us, Sabrina. Thank you very much.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Okay, so Milton by-election. Normally, these are sleepy affairs that nobody cares about, but this one seems to have, I think it has a bit of an undercurrent of urgency to it. Can you maybe give our listeners a bit of an overview of kind of what's at stake in this election, kind of lay the chessboard for us, if you will.
Yeah, so the Milton by-election is obviously to replace Parm Gill, who was the red tape reduction minister up until earlier this year when he decided to run for Pierre Poilievre federally. And I guess surprisingly, I mean, my sources in the close to the premier's office and in the premier's office are telling me they were completely blindsided by Parm Gill's departure. And I think a lot of people were questioning, you know, why leave now when the federal election is still a ways to go? So it kind of created a bit of a scramble for Ford at Queen's Park. And now he's got to deal with this by-election. There's also another by-election happening in Lambton-Kent, Middlesex to replace Monty McNaughton. It's going to be a doubleheader on May 2nd, but I think the stakes in Milton are a lot higher because Milton was a very close race. And I think we can go as far as to call it a swing seat, right? Like the PCs only won it by 4 percentage points in 2022. And they obviously want to hold on to the seat. It's not going to make a huge difference in the standings at Queen's Park. The Conservatives still are going to have a whopping majority. But this has really turned out to be a very close race between the Liberals and Conservatives in particular. I mean, obviously for the Ford government, a by-election is an opportunity for the public to send a message. And while the premier is doing pretty well in the polls compared to the other parties right now, you know, he's had his fair share of scandals and policy walkbacks. So I think, you know, looking at those numbers and how the Conservatives, you know, perform is going to be really telling. And meanwhile, on the Liberal side of things, we've got new leader Bonnie Crombie, and these are going to be the first by-elections, you know, with her officially as leader. Meanwhile, the Liberals have been inching, you know, closer to recognized party status. That gets you a lot more resources in the House, speaking time, you know, money for staff, that sort of thing. And so they're three seats shy of that. And so I think that the stakes are very high for them right now. They both picked, I guess, as they see, you know, strong contenders. The PCs have Zee Hamid and, you know, former councillor there, three-term councillor. And the Liberals have Galen Naidoo-Harris, who is the son of Indira Naidoo-Harris, the former MPP and cabinet minister for the Liberals. And he's also been a staffer. He's worked for Adam Van Coverden and Charles Souza nearby. So the stakes are really high. You know, we've seen both leaders, you know, pounding the doors, hitting the pavement. And there's a few, you know, issues, I guess I could say local issues that have come up and that are, I think, could have a big impact on this. Because as you said, you know, by-elections typically are sleepy affairs. They also tend to have really low turnout. And so it's really going to be up to these two parties in particular to really get out the vote, you know, we'll dig into some of the issues, I'm sure, mm-hmm. but really, you know, get their people to show up to the polls. Because you're right, I think the stakes are really higher than they normally are.
I mean, it is, as you say, I mean, Milton was a Liberal riding as recently as 2018 when it was actually Galen Naidoo-Harris's mum who was the MPP at that point. So not long ago at all. The obvious question and something that we actually discussed on the podcast a few weeks ago is why on earth is Bonnie Crombie not running here? This is just down the road from her old riding. It's very much her kind of territory, if you like. It seems like you've got a really good chance of winning here. Why not take that opportunity to you know, really stick it to your opponent who you're hoping to beat in a year or so by showing you can win, and then also getting back in the House, having a Liberal OLP leader in the House for the first time since 2018.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there was a lot, I guess, that went into the decision-making process. I mean, Bonnie Crombie kind of waffled a bit, said she's still thinking about it. She took a really long time to figure it out. And I guess she was weighing her options, right? You mentioned she doesn't have a seat in the House. And the previous Liberal leader, Stephen Del Duca, didn't have a seat in the House. He was a former minister. Change election 2018, a bunch of Liberals lost their seats, right? Including Indira Naidoo-Harris. And so I think a lot of things that Bonnie and her crew were thinking about are, one, you know, is it better for you to be in the House? The Liberals, I mentioned, don't have recognized party status. So they're, you know, they get a question a day. They have to share it with the Greens and the other independents. It's not like automatic, you know, or something where if you're official opposition leader like Marit Stiles, where you can really be hammering the premier and get those social media clips, you know, hold his feet to the fire. Bonnie Crombie also is a bit of a media darling. I mean, she's been showing up to the media studio at Queen's Park, even though she doesn't have a seat. And it's always a full house. I mean, everyone in the press gallery, we're always there. We're always asking her questions. And so I think, you know, no matter what she's saying, she's still going to get the coverage, whether or not she's physically at Queen's Park full time. I think also for a lot of Liberals that are close to her that I'm speaking with, they're saying that, you know, fundraising is a top priority for them right now. I mean, obviously money matters. Election. They really want to mount a competitive campaign against the Ford Conservatives, who are, you know, have blown the rest of the parties out of the water. I just did a roundup in the newsletter of Q1 fundraising. The PCs were at like over $1 million in the first quarter of the year. And the other parties, you know, were way behind on that. And so I think that a lot of people think Bonnie would be better suited, you know, going to shake hands and kiss babies and tour and introduce herself and even define herself, because the Ford Conservatives and, you know, Stiles' NDP have been taking out ads. The Conservatives are spending a ton of money to, you know, paint Bonnie Crombie as the queen of the carbon tax. So I'm sure she needs to go out there and really, you know, define herself before her opponents are doing, which they're already doing. There was some talk about a salary there as well. I mean, Bonnie Crombie is getting paid about $185,000 annually from the party. She would take a little bit of a pay cut if she were to have it, you know, to be a sitting MPP. And then also, I think, you know, officially, as Bonnie says it, you know, they were doing polling in the riding, sort of polling her prospects. I have heard from both Conservatives and Liberals that they're both worried about how their own team is doing. So I think that just says it's going to be a very close race. It would not be a good look, obviously, for Bonnie to lose that seat. And I wonder if it was a little too close for comfort to have, you know, their new leader. It would be disastrous if she lost. Of course, it would be a win if she won, but not so much on the other side. So for now, she's sitting this one out.
Well, I mean, there's something to be said, though. I mean, politics is, it's a competitive sport. At some point, you kind of have to get in the ring and take your shots on your opponent. I've gone back and forth, say how, as much as Doug Ford and Merritt Stiles are trying to frame Bonnie Crombie, it's something then to step in the ring, take your shots, win, and then really throw it, say your attacks don't have any effect on me, and I'm taking the fight to you. Because I think that's something Doug Ford hasn't really had in his entire term in office, is really an opposition that really kind of, no, I'm taking the fight to you, and the fight's going to be on my terms. I'm the one defining the fight now. I also wanted to point out, in your newsletter, Sabrina, that you were pointing out that Galen Nadeau Harris wasn't their exactly first top choice. There were a few people that were being mulled around, and that sends me a signal that the Liberal brand might be a bit more tarnished than we initially thought. I mean, you were talking, there are a number of town councilors that were being rumored to be wanting to step in their toes in the water, so to speak, and then, you know, always backing at the last minute. And it's, I'm not gonna ask your take. What are the rumors going on behind the scenes that this happened, that it was so hard to find a candidate, and that Galen's like choice number three, I think, three or four on the callback list? What's the vibe in behind the curtain, so to speak?
Yeah, I guess it depends on your vantage point. I mean, I've definitely talked to Liberals, and of course, you know, like any Kool-Aid drinking partisan person, no matter which party you're with, you're going to try and spin this a little bit. And I guess from their point of view, they're thinking that they had a lot of folks who were really interested in, and that's why this search was so difficult. So I'm just going to preface this by saying that's the party line, essentially, unofficial line. But you're right. I mean, Christina Tesser Dirksen, Ward 1 counselor, I believe. I'm going to have to fact check myself on that one after, but I know she had been vetted. You know, she had this conversation with the party. It didn't, you know, work out. We talked about Bonnie Crombie potentially running. And then I have seen some, I guess, backlash from both Liberals and their rivals, Conservatives, even the NDP, sort of pouncing on Galen Nadeau Harris's candidacy and saying, well, you know, you had all these people interested and you kind of ended up going with, you know, someone who's a nepo baby is actually what I heard someone call him. You know, Galen is I'm sure, you know, a strong candidate in his own right, community activist and all that, but essentially to kind of come out with someone who's the son of a former cabinet minister. I mean, even Doug Ford is the son of a former MPP. You know, he's got his own family political dynasty here. So I don't know if that will help or hurt Galen, but of course he's got that name recognition, which in a by-election can certainly help you. But you're right. You know, I think in terms of the Liberal brand, it definitely needs like some revival here, right? And a lot of, I mean, since 2018, there's been a lot of attempts at that. And now they think Bonnie Crombie's the one to really, you know, pull them out of this. And I do think that she's starting to do that. We have seen in recent polling, I'm thinking of one from Liaison Strategies, that shows, you know, while the Conservatives are still, would still form government, you know, they're still leading the pack right now, the Liberals have been gaining steam and, you know, actually outpacing the NDP in some polls. And so while they'll say, you know, the only poll that matters is on election day, or as Doug says, polls are for dogs. I do think that the Liberal brand itself is still going strong in Ontario, but it's all they've also got to contend with what's happening federally, right? Because right. Justin Trudeau, his popularity is in the toilet right now. I've actually heard from some Liberal canvassers who have been going door knocking, and they're like, you know, we voted Liberal in the past, but not this time. And so it will be very interesting to see. You know, I know some Liberals are saying that Bonnie can't win until Justin Trudeau loses, and Ontario has this weird history where you've got one party at Queen's Park and then the opposite on the Hill. So like right now we've got Conservatives at QP and Trudeau and the Liberals over in Ottawa. And so I do think that, you know, how the federal election plays out is probably also going to really have an impact on Ontario in 2026.
On that note, is that kind of the Ontario Liberal playbook on this in this campaign? Because I'm seeing a lot of overlap between what they're doing right now and what Stephen Del Duca did prior to the last general election. And it's that polls show that the Liberal brand was kind of on the rise and whatnot. And then he infamously did not seek a seat in the legislature. It was kind of this, I know COVID hit and that was a whole thing, but I'm seeing a lot of overlaps here. And is that just it? Is that the Liberals are hoping, okay, history will prevail. The electorate will turf out Justin Trudeau. They'll elect a conservative government in Ottawa. And as Ontario does, they'll turf out the Tories at Queen's Park and elect a Liberal government to Queen's Park. Are they just kind of taking history for granted here, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And certainly it is the attitude of some Liberals. They think Trudeau's got to go. And then that's the only way Bonnie's really got a chance here. And I kind of wonder if, you know, Doug Ford's camp is feeling the same way, but, you know, just with opposite people, like the reverse situation. I mean, we know there's no love lost between him and Pierre Poilievre. And I do wonder, you know, if there is, you know, Pierre Poilievre and the Conservatives end up winning federally, what is that going to mean for Doug Ford with an election, you know, we expect not shortly after the federal one. So you're right, you know, it's really a big question of how this plays out. And also I think a lot of voters who are angry at, you know, basically any incumbent government right now, but especially federally in by-elections, I think this is just the first chance to punish some politician, and they might take out, you know, their frustration with Trudeau on Bonnie Crombie. I guess, you know, the May 2nd, we'll find out how it all shakes out. But you're right. Certainly, federally, we can't really ignore what's going on there. And it's not lost on people here at Queen's Park.
The other sort of major point in this by-election, and we're talking as if it's a two-horse race. And I think we're talking that way because it is a two-horse race. It's between the PCs and the Liberals here. And I guess... you know, some listeners might be going, well, aren't the NDP the opposition, the official opposition in this province? And point being that, yeah, they are. But after the last election in those kind of classic 905 ridings, the Miltons, the Oakvilles, the Burlingtons, the Mississauga kind of ridings, the OLP are very much the closer of the opposition parties. And I think that's sort of the one thing Stephen Del Duca did manage to do was not win any seats, but actually to get the OLP back to kind of second place where they had been pushed into third place in 2018. Now, why am I going on that kind of diversion there? To come up to the next point, which is that Zihan Hamid, who we spoke to during the last municipal election, and who was a really good, you know, the best candidate to ever run against the longstanding mayor of Milton and to really give him a run for his money, and who struck us as being a very progressive, really an obvious Liberal candidate, but he's running for the PCs. How did that happen? I mean, if you're going to ask me who should be running for the Liberals, if not Bonnie Crombie, I would have said Zihan Hamid.
I don't want to scoop myself, but I am kind of working on something around that, you know, Z's background and I guess, you know, liberal past. So stay tuned. But you're right. I mean, there were a lot of questions about that. I mean, even when he was rumored to be the candidate, even conservatives were like, what? Like, we're going to get a liberal. And I guess they did. And now, of course, you know, Z is singing a different tune and saying Bonnie Crombie's not it. You know, Doug Ford is it. You know, as a good soldier candidate would. But you're right. I think one thing that, if I can toot my own horn, I scooped in the newsletter was that Z was actually a delegate for Stephen Del Duca during the 2020 leadership. And so, you know, he's definitely been a supporter. He was endorsed by Adam Van Coverden, the Liberal MP, for his council run or his mayor run, I should say. And I guess, you know, you can get away with that a little bit. Because obviously at the local level where Z was, you technically don't have a party affiliation. It's like an unofficial thing. And so I think that at this point, he's the candidate and now he's got to be drinking the Kool-Aid with the rest of the conservatives. But I wonder also if this is going to have the impact of taking some of those liberal votes away. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a liberal voter and maybe, you know, you're kind of in the middle or you're on the fence and you see a liberal leaning guy running for Doug Ford, maybe that's your happy medium there. But definitely when Bonnie was still rumored to be the candidate, I know that a lot of conservatives were wanting to like rush, and they did. They were, you know, among the first to nominate a candidate of the main parties for Milton. And I think maybe now that Bonnie's not the candidate, perhaps they're thinking we should have maybe taken our time. I know that they were hoping someone like Lisa Raitt, who would obviously have been a heavyweight and, you know, probably blown anyone else out of the water, even Bonnie Crombie, if she was the liberal candidate. Lisa said, no, she's dealing with her family stuff now. She's happy staying out of politics, at least right now. But, you know, I do think that the candidate search and who these people are was really a long consideration for at least the liberals. They were forced to do it. But for Z, I think that now it's, I'm not sure if it's something that is really going to matter so much to voters. It kind of feels like a bit of an inside baseball thing, because at the end of the day, I think the public just wants someone who's going to fight for them. You know, Doug Ford was up today announcing moves for two-way all day go service. I know that's a big deal in the riding. And so I think that perhaps if you think, you know, we need someone in government to get us what we want, then it doesn't really matter if you've got a liberal past. They're probably going to pick the government guy. If they're mad at Doug Ford, it might be the liberal guy.
But the fact that Z was fairly progressive. I mean, when he was announced, I went back and I listened to our episode with him when he was running for mayor, because I was like, this doesn't square with me. You know, what he was talking about in that episode, he was talking about greater density for Milton, the need to intensify with high rises and whatnot to meet housing targets and all that stuff that sounds very kind of progressive. And then I'm trying to square that with running for Doug Ford, who is, you know, he doesn't even want fourplexes. That's too high of a density for him. And of course, infamously, Doug Ford wants to expand into the Greenbelt with more sprawl. So it's like, how, I'm wondering, like, do you, without scooping yourself, like, my question was always like, what was the offer made there that this is a very big policy gap. This isn't a little like, you know, oh, I can see past this. This is almost like a 180 reversal on Z's mayoral ambitions. They seem to be throwing out the window to run for the Tories.
No, you're absolutely right. And it sounds like you guys are in the same boat as me, that Z has not called you back yet for an interview.
No.
Where these differences, right? I know. And he's got a lot of explaining to do, which I'm sure he's having to do at the doors. But he did actually promise me an interview in the beginning, put me in touch with his people, but I haven't heard back yet. But you're right. Right. I mean, he sort of square these changes. At the end of the day, I mean, politics is politics, and I guess people are allowed to change their mind. But you're right. I mean, it does raise a lot of questions about why this guy.
Okay, on that note, I do want to, maybe this is a chance to vent or be somewhat unprofessional, but so be it. It's my podcast, our podcast. We can decide. But you've tried to reach out to Z. We try to reach out to Z, and we both heard back from Z personally saying, "Hey, I'd like to sit down with you. I want to present my side of this. And when we said, okay, let's go hash out the details, date and time to make this happen, they go, well, and I'm getting the sense that that's very much from a party position. And I question, what's how happy is he going to be if he wants to talk about the issues and he wants to voice his opinion, but clearly he's being muzzled right from the get-go in the campaign period from talking with you know, you or I.
Yeah, this is something I guess Z, like, I did have the same experience. You know, he said, we'll talk. I did ask him, I told him, you know, I'm going to be publishing all this stuff that conservatives and liberals are saying about you and your liberal past. Like, I really want to give you the chance to address this. I got a canned statement from the party. And so that's it. And, you know, he's not the only conservative candidate. I mean, infamously, especially during election time, like general election time, conservative candidates don't speak to reporters. They don't even show up to like their local debates. And I think that is mainly because the Tories all want to be saying the same party line. Z has said a lot of things that have gone against the party line. And I guess the more interviews he does, the more opportunities to put his foot in his mouth and say things that perhaps, you know, might hurt the party's chances. And you're right. I think this is definitely very central party controlled, which is just kind of par for the course. Like, that's the PC's playbook. The thing I'm kind of ticked off about, since we are getting personally as a reporter, is Galen Nadeau Harris has also promised me an interview, but I haven't gotten one yet. You know, we've still got a couple of weeks to go, so I'm still holding out for both of these guys to call me back. If they're listening, please do. But I do think that this is a very tight race for both, in particular, the liberals and the conservatives, and they just don't want anyone to mess things up for them, because I think every vote is going to count this time. And it sounds like we probably might hear from them after, hopefully, the election, for better or worse. But you're right. This is very frustrating from a reporter's point of view.
And I think I really want to sort of pile onto this for a minute, because, you know, and I would say this for both those candidates. Actually, I mean, John and I both know Kyle Hutton of old as well, who's the Green candidate, you know, another longtime party activist who was a liberal at one point, who made the switch to the Greens. You know, these are actually candidates who can speak very articulately, but both Galen Nadeau Harris and certainly Zihan Hamid are. These are better than your average candidates. And we all know that not every candidate that runs at election time, there are a reason they get hidden. And, you know, frankly, it's because there are, you know, if they open their mouth, they're going to say something stupid. These are not those guys. These are guys who could quite reasonably be assumed to be people who will be ministers in a future government, or, you know, they are capable people. They've worked, they've had elected positions before. They've run elections. They've silenced them this way. And if the liberals are doing it as well, it's really disappointing. It's so damaging to our democracy. I feel it's like shouldn't we not be treating the electorate with the respect that, you know, they get to hear the person speaking off the cuff, without notes, without having it all fed to them by the central party, particularly when these guys actually are more than capable of holding an argument, of defending their track records. It's really disappointing, isn't it? I mean, not just frustrating for us as people who are trying to put interesting stuff out there for people to read and to learn more about the by-election, but just for the sake of democracy, if that isn't too grand.
No, you're absolutely right. It's incredibly frustrating for us even to be able to do our job, but also these guys are going to be potentially representing a whole bunch of constituents. So don't these people have a right to know? And this goes beyond, you know, just talking to someone at the doors or at a debate. I think that I remember when Sam Osterhoff, you know, conservative over in Niagara, who has had his fair share of controversy for things that he said, and Patrick Brown, who was leader of the conservatives at the time, was kind of keeping him, you know, away from reporters until after that by-election that he won handily. And of course, you know, Sam Osterhoff is still a politician now. Everyone knows his controversial stances on same-sex marriage, on abortion. He's a social conservative, but at the end of the day, I remember his first scrum at Queen's Park, and it got really intense. But I think that was kind of a problem of their own making in a way, because the more you hide a candidate or a minister or whoever it happens to be that reporters really want to get answers from, I think the more vicious, if I can put it that way, reporters are going to be, because they've been chomping at the bit. And I will say, you know, Sam Osterhoff, regardless of how I feel about his politics and his perspectives on things, I think he actually did a very good job of handling himself as a rookie MPP, as a young, you know, the youngest MPP ever elected, coming to the Queen's Park Gallery and facing us, you know, head on. I think he actually did a very good job of holding his own. And it kind of felt like it really didn't need to be this big fight in a way, and to create more problems and more bad headlines. You know, you don't want so-and-so muzzling a candidate. You know, what
and
have they got?
And you're basically saying, after all, I mean, at the end of the day, you're saying, this leadership has chosen this person to run in your riding, and we don't trust them even to speak. Like, we think they're so useless that we're not even going to let them speak. And that's, I mean, that's honestly a shame in the case of the candidates that are running in Milton, because I think I'm pretty sure, just what we know of them all, that they're actually decent candidates and they should be heard. But it's so frustrating. And like you say, I think ultimately it damages. This is why people are so sick of politics, and why people are so disenchanted with everything, and why they feel that we're being manipulated and conned all the time. It's because, well, we're being manipulated. and it's a shame, you know. It's like there were candidates that were hidden 40 years ago, and they were hidden because they were a liability. I remember talking to someone who ran a campaign in Montreal, and it must have been in the 70s. And it's like, we made sure that candidate never spoke to anybody. But not when you've actually got decent candidates running, people with track records, people who are well established that they can actually speak and not embarrass
themselves.
It's
not their first rodeo. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And it kind of seems like these guys want to talk to us a little bit, but yes. I'm sure that they're being told, no, zip it.
Yeah. Anyway, before, it's frustrating, but anyway, yeah.
Before we let you go, Sabrina, I did want to touch upon today. We're recording this on Monday, April 15th. Today, Doug Ford gave an announcement, more ghost service to Milton. He's adding another, hang on, I have the notes here. He's adding another morning rush hour trip to and from Milton to Union Station. And there's more announcements all across all the lines. I won't go into them because we don't have the time for that. But I'll start off. What's your take on this? This seems to be, no matter which party is in Queen's Park, when they come out here to the 905, the announcement that they always make is go train service. That's it. There's never anything more than that. That's the only thing that they happen to know about the 905 is that go trains end here in the 905. That seems to be all their knowledge of the area is. What's your take on this announcement?
I mean, timing is everything, right? I actually grew up in Brampton, so I know exactly what you mean about the 905. And the 905 is critical, right? Like, it's going to make or break you in an election. There's a ton of seats, a ton of votes up for grabs. It really matters. And so I think that's the timing of this is raising some eyebrows, if I can put it that way, because first of all, the GO train service in Milton specifically, I mean, Doug Ford is talking about, I think it's like an overall 15% increase in service across the GTA. But to have a separated passenger rail line for Milton, he needs buy-in from the feds. And so this would be like $6 billion. He wants to do cost sharing. So I guess it would be $3 billion each. But this is obviously a good news announcement. And we're like smack dab in the middle of the by-election campaign. And so the critics pounced immediately. And they're saying, you know, I think Galen Ado Harris's press release said he finally found Milton on a map. You could have done this a long time ago. You're just doing this now in the hopes that it'll save you a seat. It's like a Hail Mary pass. And Doug is just plowing right ahead and doing it. And I think at the end of the day, If you're a voter in Milton and you really want this, you might not care about the timing of it. You might recognize it's electioneering. You might think we're going to get what we want if we vote for him. And hopefully, you know, I think increased transportation in any way is always a good thing as someone who did grow up in the 905. And so I don't know, you know, how much the timing of it is really just the politics of it. And if it's really going to just be, if it's really going to become like an issue to local voters. But you're right. I think, you know, Doug is defending it, saying it's nothing to do with the election. We want to do this anyway. You know, we support Milton, yada, yada, yada. But yes, of course, opposition critics are saying this is just pure politicking. But
this is what happens every GO Transit announcement. Like I remember working back at Queen's Park in the day, and yeah, there'd be an announcement of, oh, we're going to invest so much in service on X line to add more whatever. There's always an increase. And I think it's to come to the point now where my take is the electorate's kind of like, yeah, no kidding. Like, are you going to like decrease GO service out here? You know, are you going to say, hey, we save money by just, you know, not sending trains out? That's, everybody's expecting, you know, you're just going to increase the frequency of trains. So this, and I'm not saying this as a slight on Doug Ford, because I think, you know, if Bonnie Crombie was premier, she'd be doing the exact same thing. This is just, it's a natural kind of progression. It's, the government should just be increasing service gradually to all the service. Like, eventually we should have 24-hour service across all the lines eventually. And I'm just, so my take on this is just, is this just Queen's Park kind of taking the 905 for granted of, look, we're giving you more train service, but anything really innovative on public transit, saying like, you know, we're going to give more money to municipalities to increase public transit for underserved communities, neighborhoods that really need public transit. You know, where's that announcement, I guess, is my take. And this isn't specific to Doug Ford. This is, I think, is just something critical of Queen's Park in general, regardless of the party.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's definitely low-hanging fruit and probably just something, you know, someone said the conservatives are feeling antsy and a bit nervous about their prospects right now. So of course there's going to be something in Milton. This was actually already kind of talked about already from Doug Ford before the by-election call. But I think that especially in by-elections, we talked at the outset about, you know, low turnout and getting people out. I think there are like a couple of local issues that Doug, I mean, he talked about it today again, that Campbellville quarry. There's a lot of opposition to it in the community. And he's kind of changed his tune a little bit today from a few days ago, where initially, you know, he had promised to cancel it. Action Milton in particular has been, you know, pushing Doug Ford to keep his promise and cancel it, but it's currently going through an environmental assessment process, which could, you know, complicate things. I mean, Doug Ford had kind of, I guess, let's put it, canceled the EA process for Ontario Place. He passed a law retroactively so that the Therma Spa and Water Park didn't have to go through that. So there are things that he could do to really seal the deal for folks who are against this quarry in Milton. But today he said, you know, we're just going to let it go through the EA process. I kind of wonder if he got in trouble for speaking a bit stronger against it earlier. But I do think that, yeah, like transit just feels like low-hanging fruit, and that really to seal the deal, especially in the general election in the 905, like these parties are going to have to come up with different things. I know the conservatives in 2022 were talking about a lot of 905 friendly promises, right? Like the 413, a lot of motorist friendly policies, scrapping license plate renewal fees, that sort of stuff. Like that helps the 905 in particular, I think, because there's a lot of drivers there. So yeah, I mean, right now it's a Milton by-election, but stay tuned, because I'm sure there's a lot of other eye rolls and transit announcements coming.
I always think it's, you know, it's a bit rich when one party, and they all do it, I know they all do it, one party accuses another party of like only doing it for the votes. Of course they're doing it for the votes. That's democracy. We do it for the votes are actually the key bit that make the whole thing work. You know, we could raise gas plants. We could raise all kind of announcements that have been made by governments over the years. And, you know, how dare you do it at the most favorable moment for your own interests is kind of, I think, a pretty lame criticism. But I mean, do you think, I mean, we've been talking nationally and provincially ad infinitum over the last couple of years about housing policy. It strikes me that Milton is a classic case of housing policy in Ontario and how the implementation of it can cause local stresses. I know there's been a lot of sort of local feeling about particular developments are happening, whether there should be extending into the white space that they still have, let alone the green space, or whether they should be exclusively going higher, et cetera, et cetera. All these things have been issues of debate in Milton over in recent years. And yet here we are at election and neither the Liberals nor the PCs that I can see are actually even talking about it. This would be a place where the Liberals could maybe sort of steal a march on and say, hey, we're going to do something really radical about the Planning Act. So yeah, we're going to get the housing we need. We're going to make sure it fits with local priorities that there's not simply imposed by the Ontario Land Tribunal or whatever. But no, I mean, unless I've missed anything, I haven't heard any sort of big announcements that could grab the attention from that kind of area.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe something that I think Bonnie Crombie has been getting credit for being bold is that she has promised fourplexes and four stories across the province, which she kind of did just before Doug Ford came out and said, we're not doing fourplexes. So I kind of wonder if that was a bit of a political play, as we've been saying it always is. But I wonder if that's going to be, if that's something that is going to be talked about at the doors too, because yeah, Ford is anti-fourplex, but the reason I guess conservative insiders are telling me he's against fourplexes is essentially that a lot of Ontario was still NIMBY, and a lot of these 905 suburban places have those NIMBYs. And we've seen polling that suggests that, you know, majority of Ontarians think that we need more housing, just not in my backyard, essentially. Like, my community has enough housing, but the rest of the province, like, I think it's obvious that we need more housing, and especially in the GTA where a lot of newcomers are settling. And so I do think that there are things to play with, but at the same time, like, Bonnie Crombie is still having to bring the party from third place right now. So it's still a long ways to go. Before, you know, people are thinking, oh, you're potentially the next premier, but that's not going to stop her, obviously, from saying what she would do. So I do think that housing is going to be top of mind for a lot of people. The feds, even now, it's not technically their jurisdiction. They've been putting out a lot of announcements. I think we'll see more in the budget this week. But they're also willing to kind of bypass the province and Doug Ford, who's not willing to do fourplexes on these things. And so I do think that I wonder if maybe people are thinking it's not so bad if we don't have fourplexes here, or they're thinking that, you know, the feds will do their own thing and work with municipalities, so it doesn't really matter what's happening at Queen's Park. I don't know if that's something the Ford government really wants, but they've also had like their fair share of problems with housing, right? Like, this last year has basically just been a bunch of policy walkbacks and tinkering around the edges without doing anything bold enough to actually get like reach this goal of 1.5 million homes in a decade. Our housing starts aren't even close to that currently. So we're already off track. But I do think that the conservatives need to be bolder, because if, you know, we're standing in an empty, Bonnie Crombie or Marit Stiles is standing in an empty parking lot in 2026 saying Doug Ford promised there would be housing here and there's nothing, I think, you know, the conservatives might be riding high in the polls right now, but I think that's going to be really damaging for them come 2026.
I think we're coming up on our time for this episode. I don't want to keep you any longer, but I do.
I could ramble about this stuff forever.
So could we, and that's why I think we're going to cut it to an end. But I do want to ask one final question, and I don't want your opinion on this, but I'm wondering if you've, in your discussions with the PCs and the Liberals, what is both party worried about should they lose this by-election? So just to be clear, if Z loses, what are the Tories taking away from that? And if Galen Nadeau Harris loses, what are the Liberals going to be taking away from that going forward into a general election?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for the PCs, most, and a lot of them are worried, right, on like both sides of the fence here. And so I think it feels a bit touch and go for each, the Conservatives and the Liberals. But you're right, like the Conservatives, I think it's going to be a bit of a wake up call for them, because right now they're still, you know, leaving the other parties in the dust when it comes to polls. But an election is an election. They'll probably hang on to Lambton, Kent, Middlesex. That's been a Conservative stronghold from the get go. And so I don't think they're worried about that one. But obviously Milton, election, if you're losing and you're losing to Bonnie Crombie in particular, I think that Doug Ford is going to be even more shook. I mean, he's attacking Bonnie Crombie at literally every opportunity he has. They've been spending a ton of money to take out attack ads against her. I mean, we've barely talked about Marit Stiles, the NDP, and that's kind of like just par for the course at Queen's Park. It's like Marit who? And so I think that, you know, for the conservatives, it's going to be, well, we really should be afraid of Bonnie Crombie. If Bonnie Crombie loses, I think that it might not necessarily be on Bonnie Crombie because this was, you know, a conservative incumbent. I think that they'll probably try and like convince themselves that it's not as big of a loss. But certainly this is an opportunity for Bonnie Crombie to say, look, I'm the new leader. We're third place. We still won this by-election. They won a couple of by-elections just before she became leader. They could get that party status. So I do think this is really, you know, the stakes are almost the highest for Bonnie Crombie because this is her seat to poach from the conservatives. And she could kind of flex all that stuff that she was talking about during the leadership, being a strong fundraiser, you know, being popular in the 905. She was mayor just next door in Mississauga. So I do think that if she loses, the Liberals will be licking their wounds quite a bit. And it's not going to be a good showing for her. But at the end of the day, I think the biggest loser is probably going to be Marit Stiles and the NDP because we haven't really been
talking about.
and they're official opposition, right? I know the Greens are actually doing well in Lambton, Kent, Middlesex. So that's like another like mm-hmm. you know, offshoot story that I've kind of been following too, just to see how the Greens pick up on things because they obviously had a historic win in Kitchener Centre, you know, not too far away and grew their party from 1 to 2. So I am curious to see if the Greens can kind of increase their vote share a little bit, especially in a by-election. It would be a really tough feat.
Okay. On that note, thank you very much, Sabrina, for taking the time to come on, and we'll see how this goes. And maybe we'll have you on again in this future episode to talk Ontario politics as well, probably closer to the general election, I would imagine. But thank you very much for your time today. Thank you very, very much once again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That's it for this episode of The 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns, or ideas for future episodes to our email, info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us keep The 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now. See you next time.
I'm Matt Kundel, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.